From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, the first ever Ministerial for Religious Freedom gets underway here in Washington tomorrow morning. FRC's Travis Weber will stop by the studio a little later with an overview of the week. And President Trump wants to remove the security clearances of several former Obama intel chiefs. We'll talk about it with Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. I'll also ask him about his being encouraged by his colleagues to seek the chairmanship of the largest caucus of conservatives in the House, the Republican Study Committee, in the next Congress. We'll talk with him in just a moment. Also, atheist activists are rejoicing. A Bible has been removed from a POW-MIA memorial at a Wyoming Air Force base. Is their celebration premature? Well, we'll talk about it with Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska, retired Air Force officer. He has a few thoughts on the matter. He'll be with us later in the program. And something that is long, long overdue. At its summer meeting, the Republican National Committee, the RNC, considered a resolution and passed it that would require public schools to get prior written consent from parents before exposing their children to graphic sex education. We'll talk about it with Cynthia Dunbar, Virginia committee woman to the RNC. That and your phone calls coming up on this Monday edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, it's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, well, you can kind of keep up with what's happening at T. Perkins. Okay. At the urging of Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, President Trump is considering taking the security clearances of several previous Obama advisors that some say are profiting from their security status. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, a White House spokesperson, had this exchange earlier today with reporters at the White House briefing.
Not only is the president looking to take away Brennan's security clearance, he's also looking into the clearances of Comey, Clapper, Hayden, Rice, and McCabe. The president is exploring the mechanisms to remove security clearance because they've politicized and in some cases monetized their public service and security clearances, making baseless accusations of improper contact with Russia or being influenced by Russia against the president is extremely inappropriate. And the fact that people with security clearances are making these baseless charges provides inappropriate legitimacy to accusations with zero evidence.
Joining us now is Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. That's the northwest corner of the state. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee. And he's also being encouraged by his colleagues to seek the position of the Republican Study Committee chairman. We'll talk with him about that. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Always a pleasure to be with you.
All right, Mike, let's start with the president considering the idea of removing the security clearances from these critics, previous advisors to Obama. Is this appropriate action for the president to take?
Well, there's really two questions that are circulating on the Hill this afternoon. The first one is, does he have the legal authority to do it? And the second one is, politically, should it be done? I mean, the answer to the first question is clearly that he does. You know, the Supreme Court has repeatedly said in cases in the past, most recently 1988, there was some dicta in a Supreme Court case that affirmed that the president really does have almost the unilateral plenary authority over controlling classified information. It sort of comes out of his explicit investment of power in the Constitution. It's not explicitly stated this issue itself, but it sort of emanates from that. So he has the authority, the ability, we would argue the responsibility to make sure that our classified information is being very carefully handled and with the utmost of care, which leads to the second question, should this be done? Well, look, obviously a lot of us have a lot of concern, a lot of question, I think the American people do, about how some of these former Obama-era officials are handling that very information. I think it's a dangerous thing. I think it's almost unprecedented what many of them are out doing right now. So, you know, perhaps the president's move today is an appropriate one. We'll have to look into it and see how it all shakes out.
It's really fascinating with this president. He's always charting new territory. in doing different things, in being bold, in taking on the challenges that are before us. Now, a couple of things on this. One, do we know that they are actually using any classified information, or do they still have access to it? Because having the clearance doesn't necessarily mean you have access to it. But secondly, and I think this is probably the bigger point, is that they're profiting off of the fact that they can claim that they have high security clearances, and that somehow makes them a more credible figure in the press, at which they're using that platform to attack the administration.
I think all of those are valid concerns. Look, as the White House said today, they are politicizing these agencies. They're monetizing their former positions, and I think that's a real concern to most, many Americans if they look at this. I mean, these intelligence agencies are supposed to be apolitical in their design and in their the way they act, and so it's a real concern. I think that the rule of thumb is that one is usually granted security clearance up to 3 years after they leave their post. Of course, there are many thousands of people who have various levels of security clearance, throughout and around the government. So we've got to do a really careful job of maintaining these state secrets and all of this sensitive information. The Supreme Court suggested to Congress a few years back that they provide the executive branch some new that they would adopt some new classification procedures. Maybe some of that needs to be updated, and maybe this is a moment where there's a recognition among the American people that job really needs to be done.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest in this first segment, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. He represents the 4th Congressional District. Prior to coming to Congress, spent 20 years as a constitutional attorney defending religious freedom, advocating for the first freedom. Mike, you have I woke up to a message this morning that you have been encouraged by your colleagues in Congress to seek the chairmanship in this next Congress of what is the largest caucus of conservatives. It's the Republican Study Committee, founded back in 1973, dedicated to a limited and constitutional role for the federal government, strong national defense, protection of individual and property rights, and the preservation of traditional family values. You have a vision for that. That's why you came to Congress.
I do, Tony. And, you know, it really has been humbling. I'm really honored to have been asked and encouraged by so many members to seek the chairmanship. And after a lot of prayer and deliberation, Kelly and I talked about it for weeks, and we've decided to throw our hat in the ring. So I sent that note around to some colleagues late last night. And I guess this is my formal announcement of my throwing the hat in the ring. So thanks for giving me the opportunity here. But look, I really think that the Republican Study Committee, or RSC as it's known on the Hill, is just a critically important group of conservatives in the House. It is the largest, as you said, the largest caucus of conservatives in the Congress. And I think it has an unprecedented opportunity and responsibility going into next year, into the next Congress. I mean, I've argued, and I said this last night, that since the founding of the group in 1973, I think this might be our most important moment to paint with those bold colors, as Ronald Reagan used to say, and provide a steady voice and intellectual firepower to defend and advance our core conservative principles. This is the same work that you're involved in every day and so many of our allies. And we've just got to make sure, I think the American people need and deserve right now our clarity and our conviction and our consistency, perhaps more than ever, at least in the modern era. And this is the group that can do that and really help steer the ship of the country.
Well, folks, I hope you caught that. He's announcing his candidacy formally here on Washington Watch. Mike, I actually think that I have to go back and check the record, but I think maybe Steve Scalise, when he announced his bid for the Republican Study Committee, also shared that news here on Washington Watch. And I was just thinking earlier today, I know you actually, before coming to Congress, hosted Washington Watch for me a few times. You would join the ranks of Mike Pence, Vice President, was also chairman of the Republican Study Committee and also a guest host for Washington Watch. So you're in good company.
that's an all-star list there. Those are good men, and there's a rich history at the RSC, and it really has played a critically important role. You know, Ed Follner of Heritage was the first executive director of the group. And he said a few years ago, reminded everybody about its role. He said, you know, this RSC was really designed and founded to be the intellectual arsenal in the House. The idea is that this is the group of conservatives that keeps the ship steered in the right direction. He made the point, and we all know it and believe it, and you talk about it often. There's a big distinction between a true commitment to conservative principles and a mere membership in the Republican caucus. You know, those two things are not always aligned. And so it's the responsibility of committed conservatives, those who believe in our core principles, to stand by those principles and to be a winsome witness for those and to help affect and direct the policy of this nation. Otherwise, there's a natural tendency for it to drift to the left. And we've got a big responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, let me ask you, Congressman Mike Johnson, you've got some very notable leaders who have led the Republican Study Committee going back to 1973. Of course, Mark Walker, current chairman, doing a great job. Tom Price has been chairman. I mentioned Steve Scalise, the vice president. Dick Cheney was actually, I think, chairman of the Republican Study Committee, if I recall, back when he was in Congress. What are your plans for the Republican Study Committee?
Well, I think that it begins with a very basic commitment that we've got to be able to articulate and make plain where we stand. We all love Ronald Reagan's famous speech to CPAC back in 1975, and you know he famously said that we have to raise a banner of no pale pastels but bold colors to make it unmistakably clear where we stand on all these issues that are troubling the people. And, you know, those words ring true today more than they ever did before. We have to reassert those principles, raise them to full view. You know, we're in an environment right now where young people, young Americans are beginning to take hold of these ideas. You know, they like the idea of socialism. I mean, that would have been unimaginable to us even a few years ago. But this is where the culture's drifted. So it's never been more important for conservatives to be able to stand up and give voice, be, as I say, winsome witnesses to these principles. And the RSC is really the conscience of the Republican Party in that regard. It is the group that holds the line, that you know, represents conservatives in the House to leadership when big decisions are being made, and works as a consensus builder, again, to hold and to move, direct the ship to the right, to those core American conservative principles. So we really need to be a clear clarion call, a clear voice, and we need to help direct conservatives in the House to hold that line. And you know how difficult that can be sometimes. You just need a steady hand of leadership to make sure that you know, we're faithful to that responsibility.
Well, you are absolutely correct. It is essential. It is much needed, and I think you do a great job at it. Mike Johnson, thanks so much for joining us today and making that announcement here on Washington Watch.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you as always.
All right. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana going to seek chairmanship of the Republican Study Committee in the next Congress. Known Mike for a long time. He's got some... I don't know who else is going to be getting in the race, but there's some great men and women on Capitol Hill serving, and you need to be praying for all of them. All right, coming up next, an Air Force commander caves to the demands of an atheist to remove a Bible from a POW/MIA memorial. We'll talk about it with Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska after the break. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage. And this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I am your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Washington Watch is learning that the commander of F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne, Wyoming, removed the Bible from a POW MIA memorial. Now, the commander, Colonel Stacy J. Husser, was responding to demands by a one-man left-wing anti-religious organization. Now, to paint a picture, the memorial is a small round dining table with one place setting, a candle on a white linen tablecloth and a Bible off to the right side. It is to remind people that there are those still missing in action, POWs never accounted for. And this is, most installations have these. And it is just a reminder that there are many who we just, they never came home, and we don't know their status. But faith is something that many, many hold on to, and that faith is rooted in the Judeo-Christian religion, the Bible representing that. With us now is Congressman Don Bacon. He represents the 2nd Congressional District in Nebraska, and he serves on the House Armed Services Committee. He retired from the Air Force in 2014. During his career in the Air Force, Congressman Bacon specialized in electronic warfare, intelligence, reconnaissance, and public affairs. He served 16 assignments, including 4 deployments, 3 of which were in the Middle East, and 1 assignment in Iraq. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me on. Good evening.
Well, first, let me thank you for your service in our nation's military, and thank you for your service on Capitol Hill as well. Let me ask you your question. As a veteran, as one who served a career in the Air Force, what are your thoughts about these activist atheist groups demanding that a Bible be removed from a display such as this?
Well, you're right. It's a POW MIA table. And we have to remember people that go through that most often, most of them, I won't say all of them, but most of them rely on their faith to carry them through. When you read about what happened in Hanoi Hilton and in Vietnam, and it was their faith that's what carried them. And having the Bible on the table is a reflection of that, that's what is the strength for most in that tough situation. And I think when you read what Mikey Weinstein says, and he calls Christians monsters, he's saying they're terrorizing others. The man, unfortunately, is full of hate. He's waging a war against Christianity here. And his goal is to really sort of bleach out Christianity out of the public sphere and say, it's all right if you want to worship in your home or worship in your church, but don't do it in the public. And, you know, it's all right to exercise our faith freely in public as well. And we have to be able to, I think we have to push back on that because it's a trend that we can't just sit idly by and let happen in our country. It's not right. So I wish we would have pushed back on this and said, hey, it's all right to leave the Bible on that table. And people of faith have a right to be in the public as well.
Yeah, Congressman Bacon, I'm actually a bit surprised by this because under this administration, now this was happening consistently and we were fighting these battles on a regular basis during the Obama administration, but this administration has taken a very strong position on religious freedom, including that in the military. In fact, Heather Wilson, Air Force Secretary, has spoken out on religious freedom previously. So I'm a bit surprised that this has happened on this Air Force installation. I'm wondering if this is something that the Armed Services Committee is going to look into.
Well, we'll certainly ask about it when we have the right subcommittee hearings on it. I think this is probably a localized decision. And we have to be honest, you know, if commanders at the local level, they don't want the pressure and necessarily the visibility of someone like that talking about, you know, them and talking about intolerance. And so I imagine it was more of a localized decision. There was pressure put on this commander. But I think we need to push back. I always sort of hoped that I was commander at two different bases that he would have called me because I would like to have had the opportunity to push back on that. But, you know, again, we got to remember what he's about. He's calling Christians terrorists, monsters. Yeah. And so he's, you know, waging a war against Christ and Christianity here. But I think we got to push back on that. We have a right to be also in the public sphere with our faith, and we have to be able to coexist. And we shouldn't be told that we can only exist and only worship in our, you know, privacy of our homes or our church. We cannot let that happen. But that's where folks like Mikey Weinstein wants to take us.
Well, and I think it's what you said, Congressman Bacon, very important that we push back, and that's a collective we. That's Congress, that's mm-hmm. individual citizens, because my concern as a Marine veteran and as my son is getting ready to go into the military is that if we make our military void of religious conviction, if we say you got to check your faith at the door, that troubles me as to the type of environment that would be created. And this type of action, small, you might say it's insignificant. Some would say that, just removing a Bible. But that's the process by which we are marginalizing and stigmatizing something that's very important to a lot of those who serve in our nation's military.
You know, the freedom of religion is so basic of our Bill of Rights. And you're right, they want to keep encroaching on that and pushing that back. And I think we have to, you know, be tactful and do it in a Christ-like manner. But we have to stand up and push back on this. I think we do it respectfully. And right. But we just got to know who we're dealing with here. This when you're being called a monster and a terrorist, that sort of says it all.
I could not agree more. Congressman Don Bacon, thanks so much for joining us today. And again, thanks for your service to our country.
Thank you. It's my honor, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska. We're working on some action items here to reach out to Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson. And again, she's actually been pretty good on this stuff. So no need to come down on her, but just encourage her to continue to defend religious freedom. The only contact I have right now that I was able to get at my fingertips was her Twitter feed. It's the official Twitter feed. It's twitter.com/SECAF Air Force official. So that's SECAFOFFICIAL for Twitter users. Others, I will get some. We'll have something for you. So just give us time to get it. But important that we do push back. All right. Coming up next, the Republican National Committee is pushing to require public schools to get prior written consent from parents before exposing their children to graphic sex education. We'll talk about it with Cynthia Dunbar, Virginia Committeewoman for the RNC. That's next when we come back. Don't go away.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, we've talked about this so many times here on Washington Watch. This move, consistent, steady, deceptive move of the left to indoctrinate our children with radical, politicized, graphic, and age-inappropriate sex ed curriculum. Well, the Republican National Committee, meeting in its summer meeting, wrapped up this weekend, took some very decisive steps, considering and approving a resolution that would require public schools to get prior written consent from parents before their children would be exposed to this material. A lot of it put together by Planned Parenthood, Human Rights Campaign. There's never been such a resolution as such as this that was unanimously passed in general session this weekend. With us now is Cynthia Dunbar. She's the Virginia committeewoman for the RNC. Cynthia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I would have to say I think you're probably pretty excited that this resolution passed unanimously through the RNC. It's pretty significant.
It's a landmark resolution, and I actually am having seen the battles in education for years, and I had actually watched what was happening with some of the parents that were had concerns in Fairfax, Virginia, with some different changes in the sex ed content. And then followed by that, I had committed that I was going to sponsor this resolution, draft it, put it together, bring it to everyone's attention. Right after I started doing that, another battle took place in Dallas-Fort Worth. The ISD was refusing to give the information of the content to the parents for them to even be able to know what their children were being taught. And so I saw the timeliness of it and sponsored it, brought it forward, and I was thrilled that it went through so quickly.
So, Cynthia, what these schools generally do is they have, if they have this, some of them don't even have this, California, they don't even let students opt out, but they will allow parents to opt their children out of certain curriculum. But that means the parents have to know when it's happening. They have to know what's in it, so whether or not they would be offended by it. So this kind of turns the table where it puts the onus more on the school, because the parents then have to opt in. They have to say, yeah, I want my child to have this. So it really puts some meat, if you will, on the structure, gives some bite to the parents to be able to dictate what their children are going to be exposed to.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, some places in California, they're putting the content through and they're not even giving the parents an opt-out option. But with the opt-out, for the most part, it's ineffectual. I mean, the parents aren't aware of the content. Mm-hmm. They're not aware of when they have to opt them out. And then it also makes it awkward for the students if, in fact, you do have one parent who's very knowledgeable and stays abreast of it and pulls their kids out. It's kind of like the odd man out, what do you do with the child? So just in light of the salacious content that's been going in, just like you said, most of it, most people don't realize it's either coming out of the Kinsey Institute or GLSEN or Planned Parenthood doing the content. And so this whole resolution is simply, look, we are going to underscore the supremacy of the parents to be able to determine what their children are taught. So proactively requiring the districts to reach out to the parents, give them information as to what the content's going to be, and then let them decide whether or not they want their children to be exposed to it. And I'm hopeful that a lot of state legislative bodies will take this resolution and run with it and use it as impetus to pass legislation to require this of all school districts.
Well, Cynthia, I think it's a great idea, long overdue, and I do know, because I've spoken to school board members as I've traveled the country who have said, you know what, we took the RNC platform that spoke to this issue, and I've talked to council members that I took it, it spoke to this issue, and we've used that to adopt this policy. So no doubt it will have an impact. But I think it's critically important that parents be brought back into the loop in terms of the education of their children. You know, educators lamenting the fact that parents aren't involved, but yet we've seen consistently and a greater frequency trying to cut parents out. And this just brings them back in.
Right. Well, absolutely. And there's no question when you have to have the Attorney General of Texas writing to a school district because they're not allowing the parents access to the content to even know what their children are being taught. So and the platform, and I you know, was on the platform committee at the last convention, and I saw how important that was, and it percolated up from the grassroots. And very clear with the RNC platform says that that the parents are the foremost educators and have the primary responsibility. So this just makes sure that there's a practical way to include them in this process and they can decide proactively whether they want their children in these courses or not.
Well, Cynthia Dunbar, great job. Well done. And thanks for joining us today to tell us all about it.
Thank you, Tony. I enjoyed the opportunity to share the good news.
Yes, it is good news. Occasionally there is good news. Actually, there's a lot of good news going on. All right, find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. We're going to talk about this coming back. I want to get your thoughts about this. I think this is great. I think this is the way it should be. I think schools should have to get parents to opt their kids in, not, you know, let them try to find out, make them try to find out what's happening so they can remove their kids from this objectionable teaching. All right, would you like to see local schools require parental opt-in for controversial matters like graphic sex ed? We'll talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, Visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
All right, welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. All right, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call. And here's what we're talking about, the RNC passing a resolution in their summer meeting that just wrapped up this weekend, I think Friday, Saturday. And they adopted what's called the prior consent for sex ed provision. And so this is calling on local school boards and state legislatures to require that a school, before they teach this graphic sex ed, and again, we've talked about where that a lot of the content is coming from, Planned Parenthood, need I say more, GLSEN, a pro-LGBT XYZ group, there's all these, you know, who's who on the left, okay? So very graphic. You know, we've had the activist mommy on talking about this. So this is a sea change in the way this is approached. It prior written consent respects parents, okay? It says, all right, I'm going to have to get permission from you to expose your kid to something that is controversial, graphic, da-da-da-da-da. As opposed to an opt-out, meaning, you know, basically catch us if you can and what we're doing and what we're trying to indoctrinate your children. Most parents are so busy. I mean, they just don't – all that stuff doesn't get to them. So this, instead of just kind of checking a box, say, well, we gave the parents the right to opt out. So here's the question. Would you like to see local schools require parental opt-in for controversial matters like graphic sex ed? It's required for field trips. It's required to participate in sports. And even some schools required to get to have your child's photograph in a yearbook. You have to opt in. Should that not be the case for sex ed? Let me know what you think, 866-372-7234. Before we go to the phone lines, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, spearheading a lot on the religious liberty front in our policy shop, is here. Travis, welcome back. This week, big week here in Washington, D.C., with the ministerial first ever on religious freedom. Give us our listeners a quick overview of what's going to be taking place this week.
Yeah, this is a very important event, Tony. It's 3 days. The first day, we're going to deal with civil society organizations, coming to hear from the U.S. government and others about how to advance religious freedom, partnering with the government, accessing government money for their programs, that type of thing, or how can they play a part. The second day, we're going to hear in more specific detail how religious freedom benefits societies, how it cuts against instability and helps national security, how it's consistent with other human rights and equal rights for women. So you're going to hear a lot of specifics on the value of religious freedom. The second day, the third day, we're going to have an opportunity for government officials to get together and discuss what they're going to do to help advance religious freedom. This is a really significant event in terms of what it's going to be focusing on and the very fact that it's being held, going to send a message that we are back and care about religious freedom.
Now, you wrote an op-ed that was published today or over the weekend on the significance of this event, that regardless of what happens, it's already been successful because the fact is we're having it.
I agree. And I think, you know, this is perhaps – the substance matters. We have to look at what's being said. But the very fact that we're holding this ministerial – the U.S. government's holding it. The Secretary of State is headlining it. We have our ambassador at large Sam Brownback going to be playing a role, the Trump administration holding this event out to the world and saying, look, we are going to be incorporating religious freedom into foreign policy, into our international relations. This is arguably more important. We can only look at President Trump's press conference with the Nigerian president recently, in which he questioned him about the killings of Christians in that country. The Nigerian president went back and dispatched troops to a troubled spot in Nigeria. This has to happen more. It has to happen consistently, and it'll happen because other countries know the United States is not going to let this issue slide. We need to replicate that in Nigeria, which features ongoing problems in Nigeria. They're not going away, and other countries that are similarly troubled.
I mean, this is quite significant that the first three – I mean, this is days after Mike Pompeo took over as Secretary of State. He announced this was going to be his first major event, ministerial, first ever focused on religious freedom. And so just the fact that it's being held is putting the rest of the country – the rest of the world, rather, on notice from a standpoint of – this is now a priority for the United States.
It's a priority. And, you know, we're not going to be pushing other less important issues in international fora in our foreign policy. Rather, we're going to be focusing on restoring this foundational human right, which in the modern era, we can go back to the post-World War II environment, in which we looked at the founding of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, subsequent treaties, really dealing with serious religious conflict, the Holocaust, at that time birthing the modern human rights era. We should never be neglecting this, and yet we somehow have neglected it in recent years. This ministerial really is a major step to going back to, we're not going to let religious freedom slide. And by the way, the message to other countries' leaders, it benefits you as a matter of economic security, as a matter of national security. It's beneficial for your country. And, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of countries who may not have a natural interest, a natural inclination, may have reasons that they're adverse to picking up the ball in religious freedom, we can really help spread the message, spread the truth, and change their minds on that perspective, on that issue, when we show them, look, it's in your own interest economically, as a matter of security, for your own flourishing, pick up the ball in religious freedom, even if you don't care about it at the get-go. And I know they're incorporating that message at the ministerial. Ambassador Brownback, Secretary Pompeo, a lot of others have been focusing on this. I think it's really important, and folks can go to our website. We at FRC have dug into this a bit, frc.org/national security. If they just want an overview of what I'm talking about, of how religious freedom aids national security and economic security, it can go and pick up that publication there.
Well, we are going to be obviously talking about this a lot this week. So, Travis, I'm sure we'll be talking more as this unfolds during the week. So thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Tony.
Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and we will be covering this each day as it kicks off tomorrow. Okay, here's we're going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Would you like to see local schools require parental opt-in for controversial matters like graphic sex ed as opposed to the opt-out that they've been using to hide behind. Let's go to Daniel in Kansas. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, I've got different thoughts on that. I don't think there should be a bill like that at all. I think there ought to be a bill that says if the teacher or the educational board presents that in front of any children, they ought to be charged with sexual abuse. I mean, that's
actually
right.
It's very interesting, Daniel, because I actually think, and I'll have to go back and look at this, but if I'm not mistaken, there is actually a case of that where one of the law firms has actually gone after the school for exposing kids to this pornographic material that we know what pornography does. In fact, you've got several states now that have declared a public health crisis related to pornography, and many argue that this sex ed curriculum, this graphic curriculum, is an entryway for kids to pornography.
Yeah. And I got one other point. In 1974, at the school there in Paola, in the health club, or the health class, they started doing sex education there, and it was in the seventh and eighth graders. And before the year was up, there's like 10 of the girls that were pregnant, you know?
Yeah.
And that not seventh and eighth grade, you know?
I mean, sex ed has become kind of a how-to course. I mean, it's just, you're right. Point taken, Daniel. Thanks so much for calling. But here again, it's we're talking about the parents. Parents need to be respected. And you hear all these educators lamenting the fact that parents aren't involved. Well, they're excluding them with these opt-out versus opt-in. They're not making the parents full partners. Well, they shouldn't even be partners. Parents have the ultimate authority in the education of their children and responsibility. They can delegate that authority, but not the responsibility. God has given it to them. Now, some would say, and I've heard this from educators because I've been working on this for a long time, they would say, well, but so many parents aren't involved. Well, okay, deal with those who aren't involved, but those parents who care about their kids and are involved in their lives, allow them to be. Don't make it difficult for them. Let's go to Carol in Texas. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. As far as the sex ed, absolutely, parents should have to opt in or be allowed to opt their child out. That's common sense. Mm-hmm. I think sex ed should start in the home and not in the school. And if it's pornographic in nature, it has no place in a public school. Now, in relation to the Epi Warren Bible incident, I had a text yesterday when I woke up from my son, call me when you get up. And he had sent a link to Todd Starnes' story that said that the Bible was being replaced by a generic book of faith. My son is stationed at F.E. Warren, but he's currently in the Middle East on a 12-month deployment. He was livid. He said, I have not served for almost 20 years. To have somebody take the Bible and what it means and what it has meant to those who have served, to those who were POWs, to those who still have not come home.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing is, I can't say anything, but Mom, you sure can. And he is just... I explained to him who the Mikey Weinstein guy was and sent a lot of information and things like that. He is going to make sure it's shared with his buddies, basically on a personal basis. And he's over there with a group. But I've never seen my son this angry ever.
Well, and he has a right to be. When he has served this country to protect the freedom that we enjoy, the freedom of religion, the first freedom, but yet to have it taken away in his own installation.
Well, his comment I'm sorry, Tony. His comment was, I have served for 20 years. In October, I will have 20 years. And I have attended numerous ceremonies where that empty table is there. It was there when I was at his induction ceremony, and it was hard to keep my emotions in check when they were telling the significance of the table and what each item meant. And he said, you know, why is it that it's only Christians that this is happening to? And
well, tell your son, Carol, that he is not alone in his outrage, and that there will be many others weighing in on this. And we hope to see, as we have in other cases, to see that Bible restored to that table. And not just the Bible restored, but all that it represents and the freedoms that it represents, the freedom of religion, the freedom to believe or not to believe. But we all have that right. And it should not be taken away from those who serve to defend that right. Carol, thanks so much, as always, for listening and for calling in. And thank you for giving voice to your son's concern. All right, very quickly, going to work another call here real quickly. Let's go to Missouri, where Terry is on the line. Terry, welcome to Washington Watch. Got 30 seconds.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I have a degree in elementary education, family of educators. One thing I want to point out, unfortunately, I'm from a divorced home, my child from a divorced home, and I would like to pass on that the legislature require both signatures. So many parents have joint custody, but if you mm-hmm. just have one signature that has to get, you're going to have problems because
yeah.
My ex-husband married a liberal, and what's being taught in one home is totally different from what's being taught in another home.
A very good point, Terry. Very good point. Thanks for calling and sharing that. That's another one of the complications that we face. But that does not negate, even though it's going to, someone say, well, that's going to be an increased burden because then you've got to get, you got to get two different signatures, two different forms. Okay, I get it. I understand it's going to be more difficult. But again, you want parents to be involved in the education of their children? Start by respecting their authority. And again, we've seen, it was mentioned what happened in Dallas. It's happened in Pennsylvania where parents have been denied. Now, that wasn't a sex ed. That was a video about promoting LGBT stuff in Pennsylvania. But the parents haven't been able to get access to it. Parents have a right to know and to be involved. All right, folks, out of time. Going to be a busy week. Don't miss any Washington Watch because we've got a lot happening this week. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.